Thanks again for joining us. Let's jump right into it. As a matter of providing some background for our listeners, can you tell me what the current situation is with your parents?
They're currently at ICC on Nason and very happy. They're very comfortable. All their needs are being met. I've seen stability in their overall well-being. So we're happy.
Are they in an assisted living or a memory care or
assisted?
One of each?
No. Okay. My mother has dementia, although I've seen it while it gets out of control when she's dehydrated.
Okay.
I have seen that the care that they've received at ICC has been consistent, and so that's helped her dementia subside. It doesn't mean it's gone away,
sure,
but it has subsided to a manageable level. So she doesn't need memory care at this point. Okay. My father's in a wheelchair, and he has, I'd say he's 80-20 is the way that I would describe him. 80% being full cognitive, you know, as at 80%. And then the 20% would probably be partial age and then his medications that help maybe occlude his memory for some reason, or, you know, is more on the daily basis than something 40 years ago.
So, okay. All right.
That helps.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Okay. Now what I'd like to do is I'd like to kind of go back in time a little bit here.
Okay.
And I'd like you to, I don't know if we're the first or second or how if you've been at other facilities yet, you'll get to that soon. But I'd like you to go back in time before you had even started to think about, you know, assisted living or memory care.
Right.
Tell me what was happening in your life that thought, you know, as you were leading up to maybe investigating this industry.
Okay. About 7 years ago, my father had an operation on his back. And my parents were still living at their house. They'd lived there approximately 40 plus years, 45 years. And they were completely capable of doing everything for themselves. However, on occasion, I would see that the burner was left on, and I would see, or that eggs had exploded to the ceiling, okay, in that sort of a moment. Or that they would be asleep, and that a burner was left on in the kitchen. And I would pop in to say, hi, how you doing? Because we have a very close relationship. Mm-hmm. And after my father had the operation, it put him in a wheelchair. So at that point, things began to deteriorate at home a little bit more. And my husband and I would go over to help them, or the kids would go over to help them. They have three grandchildren that are married and have families. And so we would try to help them, and they didn't want the help. They were still very proud about, I can do this and we're doing fine. My father kept complete records of their medications, and to just kind of help them stay on track. And I think it helped him with his skills too, because he was used to keeping records. And but what happened was that after that operation and the decline, my father started to go into the hospital on a regular basis, maybe once a year. And we did that for a few years. And then because he wound up with pneumonia, and it was, he went in, and for about 4 or 5 days they treated him, and they didn't want to release him, but he wanted to go home. He came home, was home for 48 hours, went right back in. And then this time they said that the pneumonia, actually, they saw a different strain of the virus, and they said what it could be is that he's been exposed to something in the house, like mold of some sort. It's an old house, or even something from the hospital. We can't tell you, but we do know it's different. He was just here 5 days ago, you know. So at that point, we looked at, he has COPD, CHF, and then, of course, he's in this wheelchair. So we're thinking the house isn't really accommodating him. And perhaps now it's actually harming him. Maybe there's asbestos. There's things in the air that it's not clean air. So we moved to an apartment, and they're there for 3 years. And at that time, I was taking care of them now 8 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours a day, popping in and out throughout the day. Go over for 2 or 3, run home, do things, then come back. And so I was on a tight loop. At about the third year, I hired someone to help me. And at that point, my mom, because of dehydration, we did Meals on Wheels. We did a bunch of things to try to make it easier, and it just got harder and harder. And that led up to, my mother was in the hospital 5 times for dehydration. And she really needed that 24-hour care of someone there. And she kind of quit listening to me, too. Mm-hmm. I had no effect on her. I'm an only child, and we're very, very close. We love each other very much. But I had lost my ability for her to hear me, and because you want to give your parents as much dignity and respect as possible. And yet you're needing them to listen to you because now it's time for me to help you with a shower. And yet you as a daughter or a son wouldn't really want to bathe your parent necessarily. But you have to. And you'll do this to honor them. Okay? But it takes a toll on you physically. And it does on them too. Especially if they're aware like my father is. And then my mom, she would revert to almost a childish behavior because of that dehydration. Mm-hmm. And which very much looks like a stroke if no one's ever experienced that before. So we kind of went through a phase of that, and then the other lady that was helping me, we had covered somewhere around 16 hours a day, pretty easily. But by the 5th time my mom was hospitalized, my dad too, for different reasons. The hospital recommended in their assessment that they have 24-hour care. And so I took them out against medical advice for that, thinking I'll hire someone. And it was Christmas Eve, and my dad was just like, take me home. Please take me home. So I did. He fell twice in that week, and the ambulance was called 2 times to the house at different times, and he refused medical service. But he wound up in the hospital anyway. My mom did the same thing, followed suit within 2 days of him. And so we were in, should I mention the name, or does it matter?
Sure.
It does. We were at the Grove, and we were on the 2nd floor, which is their rehabilitation, skilled nursing level. And I thought that the same care that they received on the 2nd floor was what they would receive on the 5th floor. So they made us a deal. We just moved straight up because they said, at this point, if something were to happen to your parents, you would be held liable for them because you've taken them against what the insurance and or medical advice is. Okay, so I don't think you want to be, you know, that would be insult to injury if one of them dies and you've given, really, you've dedicated your life to them for the last several years. Mm. And yet, it wouldn't be from neglect. It would just be that they need more attention than what you're providing. Mm. So we moved upstairs, and within 6 weeks, we needed to move again. And that's just all there was to it.
Okay, let me interject and ask a question. How did you go from the at-home care with with an at-home caregiver to the hospital, then back home, and that's when they fell is when you decided, I got to pull the trigger and get them into some type of residential care. That was the catalyst.
Pretty much. Okay. Because my mother could not, in her dementia stage at that point, my father had been sitting on the floor for about 3 or 4 hours.
Yes.
And she didn't know why he was sitting on the floor. But when I finally talked to him, he said, I could hear him saying, give the phone to Terry. And so when she finally handed over the phone, I realized it was like having toddlers and that I had neglected them at that level. And so that was a wake up call for me, where I was trying to respect them and keep them in their environment so that they could enjoy their, the familiarity of kind of a home environment and the privacy. Mm-hmm. My parents are very private people. And so I didn't want to, and they didn't want to go into a home.
Would you say that prior to that, you know, those falls, I mean, those really, really, that really tough time, had you started to think, well, I'm probably going to have to go there at some point, or was it still kind of walled off? I have no way they're ever going to go there.
I honestly flipped between both sides. I sat on the wall, literally. Mm. One day it was like, there's absolutely, my family, my children are telling me, Mom, it's time. But I have my parents who, my mom, still having crazy days, but definitely seemed like herself at times. And then my father, who was very much in his right mind, and still is for the most part, all things considered, that he's telling me, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. That's an invasion of my privacy. I'm not going. Yeah. So I'm listening to that. I'm listening to my children say this, and I'm witnessing what's really happening. Mm-hmm. And my husband's telling me, it's your decision. You are the only child. I mean, this is, and thank goodness I have to say that about 2 years prior to my mom really getting worse in dementia, and having significant moments, and my father and his poor health, they set up a trust. So we did go and have that done, and that did help to give me power of attorney for moments that needed to be dealt with. And I'd highly recommend that to anybody. Then, yeah, so it was difficult.
Well, let me ask this now. So this you know, big incident happens after they come back from the hospital, and you finally decide, I have to do something, I must do something, I don't have a choice anymore.
Absolutely.
So you make the decision. How did you feel in that moment when you knew you're going to have to put him someplace?
Again, kind of sitting on the wall. Part of me was, there was a lot of anxiety because I was not wanting for someone to pass in this moment. I was like, please don't let this be our legacy after this much time of loving and taking care of you. Let it not be from some simple neglect, some silly moment. And thank God he saw fit to that. And then I felt relief to a certain extent too. I definitely saw that, was it me trying to keep the control? I would vacillate between, I'm like, am I trying to keep, or am I doing this for them, or was it for me? Who is this for? Because I'm tired. I'm exhausted. Right. So I'm like, well, this is a crazy moment. But in the end, when I started calling A Place for Mom, I started reaching out to different people in the the community saying, what do you know and who do you know and what was your experience? And when it all came down to it, we had the Grove took as good a care as they possibly could for the level of care that my parents needed. They just didn't have adequate staff to give that 24-hour, you know, that they needed. So my dad said, I'm going to die here. And I said, he said, get me out of here. Take me to a hotel. Put me up there. Bring in the lady, her name is Julie. Bring in Julie. Bring in, hire whoever you need. Well, we don't have unlimited funds like that. I'm thinking, I've been hearing some numbers as to what this can run up to. I've been shopping a little bit. I'm looking out there. I've stopped in at some places. Okay. And this is how we can't do that. And then on top of that, if I take you against medical advice, I'm now fully responsible for you in a hotel setting. Because now we're letting go. We've let go of the apartment. We've moved out. Their house is not in condition to move into and to rehab it, to bring them home to. So I feel like a rock in a hard place. And at that point, it was a pivotal moment where I just prayed. I have a deep Christian faith, and I just reached out to God and I was just like, we need to move him now because he is going to die here. And I could see them quitting. They were letting go, and that wasn't them. They're fighters. And so, yeah, that was a pivotal point.
So how did you when you went to the Grove in the first place, you heard about that through A Place for Mom or friends, family. How did you kind of make the decision to go there? And then how did you make the decision to go to the next place?
To the next place. Okay, yeah. So we came out of the hospital into a skilled, we'd been in rehab before. We'd been to a couple of different locations. But they had recommended skilled nursing at the Grove. So the doctor pretty much made that decision and moved them in, moved my dad in. And when my mom went in the hospital shortly, you know, within 48 hours and then did her stint, when she came out, she went to the Grove too. This time though, because the Grove, and this was kind of a kind thing, they saw that they had a couple that was pretty much like the Notebook story. And they said, we will find a room for both of them. Now this is where I thought, these people understand what we're going through. I'm dealing with both parents who cannot be separated. They are lovers. They are not, they're not good on their own apart from each other. They are just like little salt and pepper shaker. You have to have one, or you can't have one, you have to have both. And so we have to, you know, accommodate that the best way we know how. And so we wound up in skilled nursing. And then, of course, they're talking to me saying, we can move you upstairs into an apartment. And so we, you know, struck a deal and they went upstairs. And I just said, you're not going home. We're moving you out of the apartment. You've got to move upstairs. And it's not my doing. This is truthfully, I kind of, so that they'd understand that I wouldn't have done that to them, because it felt like I was doing something terrible to them at the time. I was taking away, you know, we can't drive anymore. We can't, we don't have any freedom, and they're very free type people. Why would you do this to us? And so I was like, it's not just me realizing that you do need a little help, more than what I can provide. But it's also that the medical advice is that you need this help or something will happen to you. And I mm-hmm. can't stand the thought of that. And let's just make the right decision. And they're mm-hmm. like, okay, all right. Mm. And they went upstairs. And so, but then at that point, it all went downhill.
Okay, all went downhill. Okay, yes. So I understand exactly how you made yourself, you made your way to the fifth floor there.
Right.
Okay, so after that, what pivotal event happened that you said, hey, I've got to find something that's a little bit more intensive care than what we can get here?
Unfortunately, my dad wasn't so sure that it was, my dad was becoming paranoid, and that's not his personality. Mm-hmm. He's very much about his wits. I saw a change in his personality, and he was left, my middle son Blake and I went over one night because we got these phone calls and different things were happening. So we said, as soon as we can get there, we will. My dad had called me in the afternoon and said, I had a mistake in my Depends, okay? And I didn't make it in time to the bathroom and I'm very embarrassed and I don't know what to do. And I said, well, where's the nurse? Well, I've called them. Well, by the time my son and I got there, I want to say it was probably maybe 8 hours later, mm-hmm. and they had just come in to help him. So he mm-hmm. sat in that mistake all afternoon. Mm-hmm. That was not acceptable ever, okay? Mm-hmm. And my parents are not ones that really need the Depends. It's just an in-case moment if something were to happen. So if their incontinence is not a typical moment, mm-hmm. okay? So I thought, Where was the staff? And this started me looking into who's really looking out for my parents. Mm-hmm. Because they always seemed extremely friendly. They always seemed like they were on top of it. And very clean. Everything seemed like it was organized and picked up. But no, at that point, I spent the entire week looking at what was kind of going on. And I would go and have lunch or dinner with my parents. It's not like I dropped them off and took off. No, mm-hmm. We're still very interactive. So I'm now starting to really heighten my awareness. Plus, I'm wondering, in that 6 weeks time, are my parents trying? Mm-hmm. You know, are they just saying, no, I'm not going to go? And which isn't their nature. They will. They'll go along with the game if that's what it is. When they're at the hospital, if they're just out of sorts, all of a sudden they'll just also say, you know, all the medicine, everything, everyone's trying to help you feel better. And then they get kind and friendly again and they go about it, you know. So I just saw a complete change in personality. And then I had a heightened awareness to what their surroundings really were. Mm-hmm. And then I saw things that I didn't feel were acceptable. And so mm-hmm. now it's time to look. And then when my father said, I'm going to die here, I thought, that's the big thing. That's the huge flag. I can't ignore this. And within 48 hours, I called a place for mom. They told me, gave me a couple of names. And the one lady said at the very end, she goes, and you know, just check this one place out. Cause she said, I've been getting really good reviews on this ICC place. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay. But she had a couple names that had hit before that. And I was aware of those other places. I'd shopped them before. Mm-hmm. Okay. So then basically I within 48 hours, I had an appointment to speak with Luce and mm-hmm. another lady. And I thought, I'm only going to choose, it's two places. And I told Luce, I said, I have another appointment after you. And I said, but I'm going to give you a check right now. And if that other place checks out, she goes, you can have it back. And I said, mm-hmm. that's fine. And that was, but I fell in love with it so much that I was sold right there, but I wanted to see that other place.
Sure.
Okay. So.
Sure. Okay. When you came in, when you walked into ICC, mm-hmm. what struck you that kind of made, helped you to make a decision? I mean, what was there a special feeling? Was it a smell, a look? I mean,
it was all of the above. I'm very mm-hmm. visual. When I walked in and you had the fish tank right there and mm-hmm. I thought, well, this is pleasant. Immediately I smelled home cooking. That's pleasant. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's going to, my father, who has an extreme appetite, is a foodie almost, I think mm-hmm. he's become over the years. I thought, will appreciate this. The third selling feature was that not only was it clean, here's the nurse's station here right across it. I mean, everything is just all, in immediate access. But the apartment that Luce showed me was 20 feet to a dining room table. Oh mm-hmm. my stars. This is like a custom fit for my parents because they're not super social. So they're not going to really want to go out to do all the activities and so forth. But if they can just get those three wonderful meals and go back to their apartment, this will suit them fine. Mm-hmm. So I thought, oh, this is great. Because the other place, they had to get on an elevator and go downstairs and then go into a dining hall. And they had to go past everyone to get to their corner table. And that mm-hmm. wasn't fitting them. They were doing it, but they weren't. And so that was the part where I was like, come on, we can do this. Mm-hmm. And I'll show up to all your meals with you, except maybe one, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, but so that made me right back, you know, in the loop with them. Which I've been in the loop with them at ICC, and but I've also been able to take a rest, which I much needed.
That was going to be my next question to you.
Okay.
Yes.
Was I able to let go?
Yes.
Yes, completely. I've been able to let go. Mm. That's a transition, I believe, for the caregiver, and that was. You want to let go, and you want to think that someone's watching your family and taking care of them, much like a babysitter with a child, and you want to have that peace. Well, if you know that they're not really being cared for, you don't have that peace. And I was picking up on that at the other place, and so even though they were there, now you're paying all this money, but the care is not there. So you're thinking, this is a nightmare. Okay, mm-hmm. because if we're going to pay this kind of money, I want to know that I can step away for a little bit and feel comfortable with, you know. And so, that being said, yes, it's clean. There's an aroma from the kitchen. The nurses are always at the station. You sign in and out. You know who's been to see your parents if you weren't there that day. I talk to my parents every day or every other day, okay? Sometimes two or three times a day. Sometimes we've gone now as a blessing to a certain extent because I love them, but honestly, I do need that break. We now go maybe three or four days without talking. And when I do talk to them, they're just as chirpy and perky as they were when I left them. That's a great feeling.
How long would you say it took for you and them to acclimate to their new current place?
To see that, this is March 4th will be a year for us, yeah. Okay? So I would say that I saw that my parents turned around within a couple of months, okay? Mm-hmm. And like I said, they're pretty much come to the party. They're like, okay, this is what we're doing now, okay, then we'll jump on board and we'll do it. Mm-hmm. And they knew that there was really no going back to an apartment or a house. Even though we talk about the good days, like when we were at the house or when we drove the car. Mm-hmm. I'd say it took a couple months, and they saw that this is what they were going to do. But truly, and they've each been in the hospital one time in 1 year. I'm saying we're doing great. My father has a chronic cellulitis condition. Mm-hmm. But the hydration for my mom is paramount. You must get water into people that have dementia, seriously. And the nurses have stayed right on it with my mom and the medication. So it's the stability. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that has been all the difference in the world right there. So yeah, I'd say 2 months immediate I saw it. Okay. And then after that, it's one full year. And I'd say we're doing beautiful.
That's wonderful to hear. If you could go back before you ever entered an assisted living or any kind of residential care,
right,
what would your expectation have been of this business at that time? Did you have no expectation? Did you think it was 24/7 care? I mean, what did you think it was going to be about?
Yeah. No, I didn't really have too much of an expectation. Mm. I think what happens in the process that you're going into being a full-time caregiver, you kind of all of a sudden get caught up on a hamster wheel that you don't even know that you're on.
Right.
You started out sort of slow, and the next thing you know, you're spinning that wheel, and you don't even have time to entertain looking into an industry.
Yes.
At this point, much of the reason why I was like, yes, I'll help in any way I can, is because you definitely do want to be thinking about these things in your 30s and 40s, and you just can't because you're raising families.
Right.
Okay? And you're in another level of life and thinking.
Yes.
But goodness, if you could just see into the future.
Yes, that's a great comment. It's a great comment because you're on that treadmill, like you said, mm-hmm. and there's really no time to even think about what you expect. You pretty much just get thrown into it and you hope for the best. It sounds like.
Much like parenting is much the way like that I would say. I think, you know, if in your 20s you're thinking about getting married and having children, then I would say read those marriage books before you marry someone. Uh-huh. And then if you're thinking about having a child, the time to read that child book is probably before you're pregnant, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, again, here was another life-changing situation.
Right.
Where you needed that information way before, right. Maybe years before you got to this point, and you just aren't thinking about it.
Yeah, so, and then you're stuck making crisis decisions.
Very much so.
Which is really, really difficult, and...
Because they're emotional.
Yeah, they're emotional, and anybody that steps up and says, hey, I'm going to help you, you're like, okay... And that's what we
right.
In some of my past interviews, I've heard the term, and this isn't like the hottest thing to hear about our industry, but I've heard the term bait and switch on and off. In other words, once they know they've got you in here, then they can pretty much do anything they want to you because it's so hard to move again.
Right.
And so it's really important, I think, to find a place that's going to be as transparent as possible from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great comment. If you were to build on that comment now, I want you to sum this up for a listener that might be getting ready to go through this.
Okay.
Building on the comment of try and get ahead of it if you can.
Right.
What other things would you tell them in order to make this transition for them and their loved one as smooth as possible? Or I don't know. I don't even think it's possible to be smooth.
No.
Maybe at least so that they understand the feelings that they have are normal. You know, maybe feelings of being guilty, relieved, whatever. They're all perfectly normal. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to that?
Absolutely. I think that if I have great communication with my parents, at least I thought I did. But when it came to this subject, it was awkward. There was no two ways about it. No one wanted to admit the truth. The giant elephant in the room was huge, and no one wanted to talk about it. And so addressing that as soon as possible with someone and saying, you know, I really relied on the medical industry to say, I really pushed it to them saying, it's not just me seeing this, but they see it too.
That's,
and
that gets used a lot, by the way.
I'll bet it does.
So.
I'll bet it does. I didn't think it was the first time, but I was like, oh golly, you know, I was almost grateful for that excuse. Because I did feel like somehow I was doing something wrong to them, and yet I knew it was the right thing to do. And so insult to injury is simply that you do place them, you don't want to move them again, and then you find out that they're not being taken care of.
Right.
Now you're not only paying quite a bit of money, but you're also not getting the care, so you don't get the relief. On the day that we moved into ICC, my mom was throwing up. We had to pull over in the car for her to throw up. It was a horrible experience for her. It was very traumatic. She completely curled up in a fetal position, and I thought, please, Lord, don't let her die in the next 24 hours, you know. And I didn't know if she'd come back to us. I really didn't. I was concerned. I told all the kids, you got to get to see your grandparents right away because this is a really pivotal point in their life, okay? It's been a very hard day. And my dad tried to encourage my mom as much as he could, but he almost couldn't reach her. She just closed everybody out. And so that's what's so great, to have my mom call me for the first time in a long time, who has dementia, and she calls me and says, how are you feeling? I thought I'd call you. What?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's a wonderful thing. So yes, I would tell people, one, shoot the elephant, you know, get out there as fast as possible. Talk to your parents. When you start to see signs of their declining health, just say, in the event that something were to happen to me, this is what I would want to do. Okay, so if I pass before you, please, these are my wishes, you know, even though I want my husband to do this or my wife to do that or whatever, just say, this is what I would want. And I hope that, you know, you guys can all agree on that. And then maybe taking it off of them, because they're the ones in the declining health. And so that makes them very uncomfortable, because they're like, yeah, I was just in the hospital. Now you're talking to me about dying. Okay, thanks. You know, this is...
That's a bit much. Yeah, altogether.
So it's uncomfortable to bring it up. And so then once they're doing well, 2-3 weeks later, and they've balanced out, now you don't want to bring it up. Because you're like, oh, we're doing good. Okay, so let's not revisit that. So it is an awkward thing. So the sooner you can find a window to talk about it, I think the better. And then get their wishes. Say, what do you really want? Because, for instance, my father doesn't want to be cremated. He wants to be buried. Some people don't even know that on the day that their parents pass. And now they're making a decision. Mm-hmm. And that's, it's horrible. It helped doing the trust. That answered a few questions for me. Okay. And again, it was a third party. That third party is kind of, my friend Julie that came in to, that I hired, she now is like family to us. She was truly a blessing. She was able to converse with my parents about things. So if in the event that you have a third party person in the, you know, or if there's a niece or a cousin or somebody that can talk, a brother, somebody that can kind of bring up and answer questions, maybe you can work with them if it's still super awkward with you and your parents. But, okay.
All right. So let's say that you're able to have that conversation and you're all on the same page. So that would be a great first step. What tips would you have for selecting the facility that you know, that the right facility? What kind of things would you say for them to be on the lookout for so they don't get stuck, you know, with long corridors and, you know, people watching TV all day, et cetera, et cetera?
Very much so. And that is exactly what the other place that I looked at, very clean, rehabbed, brand new, looking very fresh. However, it felt like an institution. Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't care how you doll it up. If it looks like a hospital institution, it just looks like that. And I think that my parents would never have done as well over there, even. And in fact, they actually called me and made me the same offer. Whatever they've said, I will match it. And I was like, I'm grateful for, you know, you offering that, but I have reasons for why I've gone with Integrated, and I'm just so happy and satisfied. And so it was a huge blessing. So I would tell people, the long haul corridors, if you can get that family feeling inside an environment like that, then you've made, I mean, that's one step. If you make a few visits to places and you see that others are consistently taken care of, okay, others are not just parked in some place, but they're interacted with, that they seem to be well fed, there's no odor. Oh my goodness, I'm sure I'm not the first one to mention that. It was cheerful. And it's cheerful. So I had hope when I walked in there, okay? And that was a great feeling. I didn't have hope in the other places. Okay. So.
Well, that's a good note to end on, because that sums up the kind of feeling I think you should have when you walk into a facility, be it ours or any other.
Right.
You should have a sense of hope that, you know, that a challenge can be solved and that things can get better for both the caregiver and the loved one.
Absolutely.
So thanks, Terry. This was great. You were great. You really will be helpful to a lot of people, I think, when they hear this or they read this.
So
thanks very much.
You're welcome.
That concludes our podcast. Listen next time.